Opinions expressed on the following program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Absolute Broadcasting, its staff, or advertisers. It's time for Israel is Real. Two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. Rahel and Sonia focus on life in modern 21st century Israel, telling the stories of ordinary people living in, loving, and in support of an extraordinary land. Israel is Real is a community-supported program featuring interviews with local, national, and international celebrities, personal life stories, and call-ins. Learn a new Hebrew word every week. Israel is Real. Every Friday on 1590 WSMN. Nashua's News and Talk. And now, your hosts, Rahel and Sonia.
Hi, we're Rachel
and Sonia.
And this is Israel is Real, the free voice for Israel. Boker tov lekol ha'mazinim.
Tzoraim tovim b'Yisrael.
From WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. We want to say that as Jews, we're not always comfortable asking for donations, but we are learning from our Christian friends who really, really support the Jewish people and the Jewish state of Israel. We do need money to stay on the air and to continue to bring you quality program. And we have a goal to really go into next year. We've got enough money just until December, so it's kind of urgent, our fundraising right now. So please visit our website and note we have a new website name. It's www.israelisrealnh.com. Israelisrealnh.com, as if Israel is Real, New Hampshire.com. And you can always email us at israelisreal1590 at gmail.com. Israelisreal1590@gmail.com. We do thank Vern Main, who has been wonderful to us for this past year. He is a patent and trademark attorney. He has a law firm called Vern Main and Associates. It's a local firm with a global practice, and he is pleased to announce his new office location at 547 Amherst Street in Nashua. He's also on the web at www.vernmain.com. If you need professional legal counseling on all intellectual property matters, please contact Vern Main and the legal specialists at Vern Main and Associates at their offices at 547 Amherst Street in Nashua, 547 Amherst Street in Nashua, or on the web at vernmain.com. That's www.vernmaine.com, vernmain.com. Sonia, I'm going to take a moment just to let our listeners know about something that's happening this weekend. This is fantastic. We will also be present, so if anybody goes, they can say hello to us as well. CAMRA, this is a Media Watch organization in Boston, is having an international conference called War by Other Means. CJUI, who we've also interviewed many times, is a co-sponsor, as are others. It's going to take place. This is War by Other Means, the global campaign to delegitimize Israel. It's taking place this weekend, October 10th and 11th, that's Sunday and Monday, at Boston University. It's an international two-day conference with world-renowned experts on the legitimacy of Israel. They are going to counter anti-Israel voices in the media, their NGOs, the UN, the academia, and the mainline churches that may threaten Israel's legitimacy. Some of the speakers are going to include Alan Dershowitz, Erwin Kotler, Mark Stein, Anne Bayevsky, Daniel Pipes, Yigal Carmon, and so many really, really important people. We urge you, please, to go to CAMRA's International Conference, War by Other Means. It will take place at Boston University. For information, please call 888-736-3672. That's 888-736-3672. Or you can email to conference@camera.org, conference@camera.org. And we're looking forward to being part of that as well.
And we are not going to speak there. This is important to say.
That's true.
Because otherwise the people wouldn't come.
Well, you know, we don't like to speak very much anyway, but
okay.
We are going to enjoy speaking to some people. But We don't want to take too much time right now because we are bringing back one of our favorite people, Rabbi Hausman, Rabbi Jonathan Hausman. And Rabbi Hausman just recently received an award, the Genesis Award, and we were present, which was really, really wonderful. He is a graduate of the George Washington University, Emory University, and the Tiferet Israel Rabbinical Yeshiva. He studied in Egypt. He lived in Israel. He speaks both Hebrew and Arabic and has a background in Islam. He speaks nationally and internationally on the subjects including Islam and its doctrine, the intersection of constitutional democracy and religious law, and the use of language and imagery in wars of ideology. All really fascinating subjects and very important in today's world. Rabbi J., as we like to call him, has been very active in the greater Boston Jewish community in his 14 years serving at Ahavat Torah congregation. So we are honored to bring back Rabbi J. today in his role as Israel is Real's honorary rabbi in residence. And we are actually going to speak with Rabbi J. about Hebrew today, about Judaism and Hebrew. So would you like to just tell Rabbi J., are you there?
I am here.
Good morning.
Boker tov.
Boker tov lekulam.
We just gave you a wonderful, I hope, introduction, but
I think you overdid it.
Yes, don't forget it. We wanted to just mention our Hebrew word for the day, which is Yahadut. And if Sonia can take a minute just to explain what Yahadut is.
We missed a little bit the things up, but Yahadut is Judaism and comes from the name of the first ancient Jewish state, Judea. And exactly like France calls her citizens French, French people, exactly like Americans calls her citizens Americans, exactly in the same manner we understand that Judea was the first historical state for the Jewish people. And today, Israel is sitting more or less, I would say less, in the same borders. So Judaism refers to the entire culture, religion, and ritual of the Jewish people all in one. And this is why we have Rabbi Hausman to speak about.
Rabbi Hausman, we...
You know, it's very interesting, this the word Yahadut. You know, if you take a... If you go back to the Tanakh, if you go back to the Bible, there was an incident. I think it's recalled in Divrei Hayamim and Chronicles, but I could be wrong about that. You know, sometimes these things just meld one into the other. Where literally the Babylonians are at the... at the walls of the of Jerusalem, and the Babylonian general is speaking Yehudit, mm-hmm. Okay, and the fellow he's interlocuting with on the Jewish side said, you know, please, let's speak Aramaic. We're not going to speak Yehudit. Now, it's true. It's right there in the Bible.
Right.
Wow. Well, speaking of the Bible, we thought we would start before the break and then after the break come back to a few other subjects. But maybe for if we usually do our Parshat HaShavua, the Torah portion of the week last, but we thought we might give it a try with you present, if you don't mind.
No, not at all.
Well, we came up with this, Noah and the Ark.
Jeez. How original.
This is, well, Noah and the Ark is the portion of the week. And Sonia's looking at me, shaking her head. We're not rabbis, but we try. We know that it's a popular story all around the world. So the question that we like to ask is, how can God destroy his own creation? So a secular person might say, well, God wasn't involved enough, and this is why God decided to clean the earth of all evil that existed at that time. And a religious person might say the multitude of the sins has been so bad that God could not help but destroy everything. So the commentators might tell us that the entire civilization in those days had enough time before the flood to assess their bad behavior and choose their correct moral path. I've heard they had actually 120 years because it took Noah 120 years. To build it. So with your permission, let's say that today we have a similar situation where there is some kind of a Noah. who is obeying the same commandment from God. Do you think that that Noah would be able to get the necessary building permits? Would he get the green movement to allow him to cut down trees? What about PETA and the animals? Would the electric company, for example, allow Noah to move his ark just in case it might destroy the electrical infrastructure? So what can we understand from this that today it's much harder? In other words, we can figure that it's a little harder to build a moral society in the pure sense of the word. What would you say about all of this?
Well, first of all, I would say that PETA would not be involved with it because they are noted not to be so friendly toward the state of Israel and Jewish future. So let's start with that.
Okay.
Look, I'll tell you. I find this parsha. I have a bar mitzvah at the shul this weekend.
Mazel tov.
And I'll tell you what I really found interesting. You know, you go over the first pasuk, the first verse that says, "Ela toldot Noach." These are the generations of Noach. Noach ish tzadik tamim haya b'tarotav.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know, he was wholehearted. He was righteous in his generation. So, you know, you have a bar mitzvah boy here that say, well, what does that mean? You know?
Yeah.
Righteous in his generation. You know, to me, I took a look. Well, I come to each parsha with fresh eyes every year, as we're supposed to. And, you know, are we talking about an issue of one's moral compass during a depraved age? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Or are we talking about somebody who is high ethical standards and achievement? You know, I mean, was Noah an ethical person no matter when he would have lived? Or, you know, was he just, would he have been dwarfed if he had lived at another time? What if he had lived at the time of Avraham or Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, Abraham or Moses? And you're right. I mean, the tradition teaches that Noah had 120 years to build the ark to influence his neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
How many did he convert?
Right.
Not one.
Right.
Okay? And I'll tell you, the even more interesting feature, I think, in looking, relearning this incident again, I noticed once again this year, the Torah itself doesn't even cite one instance of Noah praying on behalf of his peers.
Right.
I mean, it's astounding.
Right.
It's absolutely astounding. And then after, you know, the flood takes place and, you know, the teva, the ark, is just floating around, eventually lands, and Noah and his family exit the ark. And what's the first thing the guy does? He plants a vineyard.
Right.
Okay, he plants a vineyard. You know, I'm going to tell you and the listeners, I'm giving you a sneak preview of my bar mitzvah charge tomorrow. But what is this all about? You know, what is the Torah and Jewish tradition teaching us with regard to the actions of Noah and his wife, Ein Zerah? Everything that was placed in the ark, all the animals, all the plant life to be preserved within the ark, were to be used to revitalize the earth after this massive destruction. And I know it's probably a little bit of field what you want me to address, but this is the thing that's really capturing me today. You know, the animals were to be set free to roam and to procreate. And vegetation was meant to be planted and spread and thrive once again. And the first thing Noah does is he replants grapevines. Okay?
Right.
And as a result of that, there's the ensuing inebriation. He becomes drunk.
Mm-hmm.
The question that I have for my bar mitzvah boy tomorrow is, so, you know, where did Noah go wrong? Now, you know, we know that the barren earth needed to be replenished.
In quantities.
Yes, but, you know, that's right. But interestingly, instead of first planting grain or fruit trees, Noah starts with grapes. So what does it really talk about? You know, it talks about choice. It talks about choices that help determine helped to determine Noah's future and the choices that help determine our future as individuals and as the Jewish people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Do we want our attention to be on the useful endeavors that are out there? you know, or do we want to focus on those activities and actions that ultimately will lead us to, and let's put in quotation marks, drunkenness and shame, and close the quotation mark, because we may not be talking about inebriation there. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's a powerful lesson, I think, for Bar Mitzvah boy. And I think it's a powerful lesson for all of us today. What are our priorities?
Rabbi Hausman, I think we're going to have to take a break with and leave our listeners with that wonderful question. And we'll be back in about 2 minutes to speak with you again and continue our thoughts.
WSMN
and WSMNradio.com.
The Telegraph, keeping you connected to your community for pennies a day.
When news breaks,
the Telegraph is there. When the community needs a watchdog, the Telegraph is there. When it's time to celebrate the accomplishments of our young athletes and scholars,
the Telegraph is there.
All for pennies a day. The Telegraph has been recognized for 7 years in a row as the best small daily newspaper in New England by the New England Press Association. Find out why one of New England's best daily newspapers is your daily newspaper for only pennies a day.
A lot of people bought portable generators after the windstorm last spring or the ice storm the year before. If you want to equip your home or business with a backup generator, get help from a licensed electrician who will install a transfer switch so you can safely isolate your home from the utility and switch to generator power. Remember, if your generator isn't isolated, electricity can feed back through utility lines and create a danger to line workers. Generators produce deadly carbon monoxide, so they should never be operated in confined areas. A portable generator should be more than 10 feet from a building with the exhaust pointed away. A power outage is no time to go shopping for a generator. Buy it before the power goes out and have it professionally installed.
For practical, useful information on emergency preparedness, visit ReadyNH, the state's emergency preparedness website. Go to nh.gov and click on ReadyNH. This message is sponsored by the New Hampshire Department of Safety in cooperation with the New Hampshire Association of Broadcasters.
Ever wonder where the customers are? You know, people going in and out of stores all day long? Well, 14A Broad Street in Nashua is just such a location. Why are we telling you this? Because prime retail space is ready for you to occupy immediately. Call 603-880-0502. Take a look for yourself. That's 880-0502 and ask for Jerry. And someday you can stop wondering and start seeing your customers at your new location, 14A Broad Street, Nashua, 880-0502.
Check the latest weather, cross town or cross country, anytime. Click on the weather box at WSMNradio.com.
Adon Olam Asher Malach Beterem Kol Yetzir Nivra Le'et Nasa Vechevtzo Kol Azai Melech Shemo Nikra.
We're back with WSMN 1590. This is Israel is Real, the free voice for Israel. And I'm Rachel and
Sonia.
And we're speaking with Rabbi Jonathan Hausman. Boker Tov, Rabbi Hausman.
Boker Tov.
Because I see our time is going to be short today, we sent you a list of words. And I'm wondering if you have those words in front of you.
Judaism, Abraham, Canaan.
Okay, you are all set.
We would like to understand. We had done a program with Dr. Kedar and defining some words in Arabic. We would like to define some words in Hebrew, and we want to leave this up to you to choose which one you want to start with.
Now, you have quite a list here.
Right.
Oh, man.
We may come back to you, you know. I think that this is it's an important list.
No, without question. I mean, some of the vocabulary terms here are such important concepts to who we are as Jews, and I really speak to the state of Israel as well. So, you know, where would you like me to start?
Am Sgula.
Pardon?
Am Sgula.
Well, listen, it's very interesting. Nominally, it means, well, it's translated as the chosen people, but the question is, what does it mean to be chosen?
Exactly.
If you take a look at literature, some of the writings of anti-Semites throughout the ages, they point to this term, Am Sgula, as a reference that, listen, see those Jews over there, they think that they're better than everybody else, but that's not what the term means at all.
Absolutely.
You know, not what it means at all. I wish that the Reconstruction of this movement would understand this. The term means that we have a contract with God. We have a covenant. We have a brief with God. HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And as part of this contract, we are God's vessels to bring his word and his holiness to the world. We are the people that are chosen to suffuse the world with his message. We are the people who try to ennoble ourselves through the performance of mitzvot. And that's really what it means, you know, a mission to ourselves and a mission to the world as a whole. It doesn't mean that we're better than anybody else. It means that we have a specific mission and role, and the role is one of holiness.
Yes, and it's also maybe a good idea to bring, you know, when you have a couple of kids home and everyone is thinking that the first one is the chosen one. The
right.
Meaning is that he have much more responsibilities.
That's right. The question, well, chosen, and the question is chosen for.
Exactly.
And you have to fill in that blank, you know.
Right.
I mean, we are not Am Sgula. We are not chosen to be better than anybody else. We are chosen for a unique mission. We are chosen for a unique role.
Exactly. Exactly. And what about the triangle? Elohe Israel, Eretz Israel, Ve'am Israel.
Oh, you know, there are so many. You know, I have to be honest. That's a good one.
You know, I'm a history teacher, Jewish history teacher, and I
right.
should show you something that I know a little bit.
Oh, you know more than a little bit, I'm sure. So, yeah.
Thank you.
You know, there are, you know, it's not just from rabbinic tradition where we learn these concepts. You know, there, a couple of the German Jewish philosophers had these triangles to God, Torah, and Israel. You know, and there is this intersection between our belief in a God, our belief in God's law and the performance of mitzvot, and the connection that all of this has to a specific piece of real estate in the world. And that's how I look at this triangle itself. You know, it sets up all these cross responsibilities that we as Jewish individuals and we as a people as a whole have in this world and our relationship to an ineffable being and an immanent being and how it all intersects in a particular piece of real estate.
I asked this because it was absolutely extremely hard to explain the concept to my former students, and I said I would like to hear your view on this.
Your former students, Jewish students or
absolutely in Israel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you. It is, if you are chiloni, if you are secular throughout the core of your very being, okay, and have this real disconnect, as a Jew, have this real disconnect to how many thousands of years, how many centuries of Jewish history and theology and philosophy, it's a kind of a tough concept to get your hands around.
You're right.
I mean, you know.
But living
it goes back, you know, and if I'm just thinking about this out loud, in effect, it really goes back to, you know, this little devar, as it were, that I shared with everybody just a few moments ago.
You know,
there's an expression out there called killing time. Now, when we say that, killing time, what does it mean? You know, it can mean where we're relaxing or whatever. But, you know, if the story of Noah teaches us anything, it is, you know, how do you maintain relationship? How do you better yourself? You know, what construct do you use to be involved with worthy causes? Okay? And time is not to be killed. Time is not to be frittered away. It's meant to be used to create a construct that's greater than yourself. In other words, time. You're supposed to use time to live in
better
time, you know, and through it, you know, how you prioritize and what you do within this triangle construct that, whether you call it God, Torah, and Israel, or you know, God of Abraham, the land of Israel, and the belief in God, you know, what do you do to reprioritize what you do with the time you have that will determine the trajectory and quality and outcomes of how you live as an individual and how you relate as an individual to a people.
And
you know, in our case, the nation of Israel, which means we Jews.
And I think that speaking about Noah, it's also showing extremely clear that even if you are righteous, you are not out of the inclination to make a mistake.
That's right. And, you know, it's very interesting. At the end of the Amidah, for the listeners who are not Jewish, you know, the communal prayer of communal petition. I mean, for we Jews, prayer par excellence is done in the community, not done out as an individual out
right
in the field. Or, I mean, monks are not known to us. Okay, but at the end of that piece of communal prayer, you know, there's a little paragraph, you know, that we say silently only during the individual recitation of the prayer itself. And it's known as Amidah. The listeners should know it's known as Amidah, which means standing, because this is the prayer for which you stand, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and at the end, what is it? You know, please, oh God, you know, I realize, now I'm taking license and translating this, I know. You know, I realize that I have the Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara, the good inclination and the evil inclination within me, locked in constant struggle.
Okay.
Which one will be on top?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's very interesting if you take a look at rabbinic literature. Rabbinic literature tells you that you need both the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara to be a complete person. One gives you drive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And
which one gives you the drive? It's the Yetzer Hara that gives you a drive to achieve. No, it does.
It's true. You're right.
You know, the rabbis were master psychologists 18 centuries before Freud.
Yes, true.
And you are trying to say that it's not a coincidence that Freud was also a Jew.
No, I don't think so at all. You know, I'm at this point, it's so far removed from any readings I've ever done on Freud, I can't tell you how influenced he was by Jewish learning.
Sure he was,
you
absolutely.
Know, but you had to have he had to have something.
Oh, exactly. I'm going to Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David. I'm sorry.
You are really testing me this morning.
No. I'm not testing. I'm sorry. If this is the feeling, I'm so sorry. It is only that I want to make a clarification. What is about the Judaism. What about the Judaism? What's the meaning of Judaism? What's it telling us? What is the meaning of Mashiach?
Mashiach, by the way, in English is Messiah.
Right.
So you're
right.
Asking about the Messiah of Joseph and the Messiah of David.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know,
son of Joseph.
I think just the term Mashiach itself is the more interesting concept, you know, with the what is it as opposed to who it will be. We have this little ceremony that many Jews are familiar with on Rosh Hashanah, you know, known as, we go to some live body of water to cast out our sins, you know? You know, in Hebrew we call it tashlich.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
You know, we do this at my synagogue. We gather to, you know, this year Yom Kippur was, Rosh Hashanah was during the weekday, so we did it on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, what it's generally done. And, I was explicit. Somebody asked about, you know, how come we're on the riverbank right now? And, you know, it used to be way back when that our kings were appointed, as it were, on the riverbanks, okay? And anointed in a whole ceremony that included oil and whatnot. And this term Mashiach actually comes from the anointing of kings. What ended up happening is after the end of the Davidic dynasty, as we knew it, following the Babylonian sacking of Jerusalem, the extirpation of the first Jewish commonwealth, and the exile of our people out to Babylonia, there was this concept that developed that we will be led back by an anointed person. And that anointed person would be a descendant of the house of David.
Right.
It has taken on, certainly, this concept of Mashiach has taken on, you know, many, many, many religious overtones as it developed throughout the history, where now the concept itself, it moved from a political concept, a historic political concept, to one of religious in nature, where this person will herald, I don't mean it to sound as crass like this, but, you know, literally the age of Aquarius, as it were, you know, peace, love, and harmony in the world. And there are certain preconditions that need to take place before the Mashiach will actually come. So this Mashiach ben David, you know, we call it Mashiach ben David because the anointed one will be a descendant from the house of David.
Right.
And, the prophet Eliyahu will be his harbinger.
So powerful is the notion
that Elijah will be the harbinger of the Messiah itself, that when Jewish baby boys are born before the actual Brit Milah, the actual ritual circumcision takes place, right at that time, during that ceremony where the circumcision will take place, we set aside a Kisei Shel Eliyahu Hanavi, because the tradition is that Elijah, in this role as harbinger of the Mashiach, he will visit and participate in every Brit Milah that's performed.
And I would like only to mention one thing before we are going to a break, that Mashiach, it's coming from Limshoach. Limshoach means to, exactly like you say, to put an unguent, to put a cream.
To sort of smear a cream on you.
And the meaning is that it is somebody which became clean, because in those times, didn't have a great soap to clean yourself.
Right.
So having this ointment, it's make the people being clean. So the Mashiach, it's somebody which is clean, not only outside, but he must be.
Clean on the inside, yeah,
exactly,
as well, right.
Exactly.
Right.
A cleansing.
So we are going to a break right now.
We are going to a break, and we are going to, this is WSMN 1590, Israel is Real, and we will be back in a minute with Rabbi Jonathan Hausman.
No day.
1590 WSMN.
And WSMNradio.com.
For all updates on your local news, tune into WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. The Jeff Santos Show airs every morning from 7 to 10 a.m. Tune in to hear Jeff's political talk show and his daily sports updates. Beer Monday lineup start off with a People Sense for Business from 10 to 11 a.m. Host Deb Titus provides a sense of how to gain maximum results in the workplace. For your afternoon pick-me-up, it's time for the George Russell Experience from 1 to 3 p.m. This fast-paced show airs on the foundation of intellectual entertainment. All this and more here on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk.
What have you done for your marriage today? While you're thinking, here's what other people had to say.
My husband and my daughter and I went for a walk together.
Well, and it's going to be her birthday next week, so I've been spending time today making arrangements to make that extra special.
I called my wife on the phone and I told her, Sue, I love you. And I meant it.
I flirted with my husband like when we first got married.
I have carried my wife's purse.
What I have done for my marriage today is give my wife a break, take the kids out, have a good time so she can just relax.
I know I didn't fight.
What have I done for my marriage today? Wow. I don't know.
I cooked my husband's favorite breakfast.
I read the newspaper to my wife, and it cracked her up.
What have I done? I'm actually giving my wife the rest of the day off from me. She's going to visit with her girlfriend.
What have you done for your marriage today? Try something new to make yours great. For ideas, go to foryourmarriage.org. A message from the Catholic Communication Campaign.
Victor Ray, this is Scorpion 23, traveling west on MSR.
One Victor hit by IED at Greenwich. Mike Bravo, 310-737. This is all on fire. Request QRS.
In war, there will always be casualties. And for our wounded warriors, coming home can sometimes be a battle in itself. Join us and find out how your donation can make a difference in their lives at USO.org. The USO, until everyone comes home.
Hey, City Hall, we love it when you've got your radios on. Nashua's News and Talk, 1590 WSMN.
Lamachazikim ba betomecheha meushar dracheha darchenoam vechol netivot.
We're back with WSMN 1590, and this is Israel is Real. I'm Rachel.
And Sonia.
And you're actually listening to Rachel music. So we're speaking with Rabbi Jonathan Hausman. Sonia, you wanted to ask some more questions.
Yes, I have about 1,000, but...
and by the way, Sonia, you wanted to say that that we're not testing you, Rabbi Hausman.
No, I will say it again privately. But it is a very nice proverb that I like it, and I'm sorry that I'm jumping from here to there, but Aniyei Ircha Kodmim. Can you give your insight on this?
Where is this?
In the Hebrew side.
I'm looking to find
the third one from the end. Like up.
Aniyei
Ircha Kodmim.
You know something? The Hebrew didn't come out here.
I'm sorry.
It mentioned Am Segula and Am Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, Elokei Yisrael.
But not Aniyei Ircha Kodmim. I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. Well, let me ask you, what is... Let's start with... This is the way I usually start with my classes. When I ask people, well, what is your concept of? And then we talk about, what are we really talking about here? Like,
well, I will explain.
You know, it's like in the Amida itself. I always love this. Jews say, well, you know, we don't believe in resurrection. I say, excuse me? Oh, no, we don't. I said, you know, this little line at the bottom of the Gvot in the Amida before we go into the Kedusha, that you have this what do you think we're talking about here? No, but Rabbi, we don't believe in it. I said, well, I hate to tell you, you're affirming it three times a day. Well, it's only talking about spiritual resurrection.
Right.
Really now? Is it? You know?
actually, tell us for a moment before we get into that, as long as you're on resurrection, why don't you explain to our listeners the Jewish understanding of resurrection?
Triyat HaMetim, right.
We believe in it. It's as simple as that. You know, where it comes from, oh my God, there are various verses in Torah itself that that refer to issues of some kind of life after death. And really, Michaye HaMetim and Tchiyat HaMetim refer to the concept of resurrection. I mean, we have, well, Christians have it because the mother religion, that's Judaism, has it. It's an interesting question because it really gets into, I mean, people don't think about it that much, so it ends up becoming really messy theologically, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very easy for people to have the concept of some kind of spiritual resurrection. You know, the eternal quality and construct of the soul surviving the body, this, that, and the other. And many people who are observant, they don't have much of a problem getting their hands around it. The real problem for a lot of people is, does this actually mean actual physical resurrection? And there are arguments in the Talmud, the Compendium of Jewish Law and Lore, that actually speak to this. And there are arguments on both sides. Yes, it means physical resurrection, and no, it doesn't mean physical resurrection. But the bottom line is, when you get right down to it, normative Judaism believes in a physical resurrection as well. And so powerful was the concept that for centuries and centuries and centuries, organ donation and things of that sort, well, which of course is a modern phenomenon, just wasn't done amongst Jews, you know, because as you go into the ground, once the Messiah comes, you know, come back to life through passing through the Mount of Olives, the Har HaZeitim, and you'll come back, and what are you going to do? You know, if you had an amputation and you were buried without that arm, you know, are you going to come back without your right arm, as it were? So, you know, even amputees, you know, limbs were saved for burial, to be buried with the actual deceased person, him or herself. So, yes. You know, like I said, it's a concept that we reaffirm three times a day silently, twice a day out loud, and it's often overlooked and it's not taught, and people have all these misconceptions about it. But it's there, and it's rabbinic.
And when we are saying Am Mechaye, we mean HaMechaye Metim.
Yeah.
I'm going back to Aniyei Yirecha Kodmim.
Okay.
I think he wants to hear your perception of it.
If you want to hear my...
hear your perception, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. The meaning is that the first, like, we need to stay very sensitive to any suffering, but first of all, you should take care of your own first.
That's right.
Means your family, means your bigger family, your neighbors, your friends, and so on and so on.
Well,
before you are running to put money in Somalia, and I'm sorry that I'm saying this, you should find out if your Jewish people do not need it before. And I'm sorry that I'm so straight.
Well, to put it in the...
No, not at all. This is what the concept means, you know. And such that there used to be something known as a tamchui in the medieval period, you know, a communal pot, as it were, okay? And the tamchui was...
Litmoch, to support.
Yeah, but it was focused on the needs of the Jewish community itself.
Exactly.
You know, the Jewish poor, the Jewish hungry, the Jewish beggars, the Jewish unhoused or ill housed or ill clothed, and it's you know, the concept is such that, you know, you don't forget about the general poverty that's out there, but you know first at home, then out there. It sets a Onyei Ir HaKodmin really says, much like the story of Noah, as I read it this year, you know, there's a pecking order. There's a list of priorities.
Yes.
Prioritize family first, your Jewish community second, your Jewish community third, your Jewish people fourth, and, you know, the rest of the world fifth. Does it mean that the rest of the world is not important? Does it mean that at all? What it does recognize, this concept of Onyei Ir HaKodmin, does recognize that resources are finite and limited.
Exactly.
So you have to make tough choices.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, make them first at home. Make them first at home, then go out to the world. And look, I'll be honest with the radio ship, the listeners. Look, I as a practice, I just do this. You know, Jewish causes first, right. General causes second. You know, if it's just a choice between, and this is not in any way making a comment of the usefulness of the United Way as opposed to the local mikvah. But if it's a choice between giving money to the mikvah, which needs money, or the United Way that needs money, I give to the mikvah first.
Well, I think that's what we're doing here. We actually are volunteering our time in order to, you know, to give to the Israeli cause.
Yeah.
So, you know, in that way, we're doing the same.
It's for us.
Know,
it's
I,
not
I'll,
for
I, the I'm just going to add a political element into this, okay? With such few allies that Israel has in the world, if you are pro-Israel, what do you want to do? Give money to Human Rights Watch? Or do you want to give money to or NGO Watch? You know, give it to Gerald Steinberg's group that goes after these people that pervert and subvert truth, you know, mm-hmm. when it comes to Israel. You know, do you want to give money to Human Rights Watch or Amnesty International, or would you rather go attend the camera conference?
Well, it's a question of sustenance, too. I mean, I'm going to take it in a very, really simple shot understanding. When you're on an airplane, for example, what do they tell you to do first? If there's an emergency, you take your oxygen mask first,
right.
You first, and then the kids and everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, look, you're not going to be good to anybody else if you're passed out.
Right. And in the same way, we tend to our own and so that we can tend to the rest of the world. We are limited in time. We've got about 4 more minutes left. Which subject would you like to discuss in 4 minutes?
In 4 minutes. A rabbi who's a former lawyer speaking in 4 minutes. You guys got to be crazy.
Well, we are.
We're
we
crazy.
We actually are.
We're going to bring you back. Don't worry.
Let me just address something that I addressed a week ago Sunday. I received I don't think it was such a well-deserved award, but apparently Christians and Jews United for Israel thought otherwise.
We were there, and we were very, very proud to hear you speak and what you had to say. Please say what you said there. We would be very happy.
Well, my comment was, my initial comment was, if you take a look at history, that the enemies of the Jews end up becoming the enemies of the world. You know?
Exactly.
That the world pays the price. And if you take a look at the ebb and flow of history, you find that dictatorships, totalitarian philosophies, totalitarian political movements begin by targeting a specific group. And that group is the enemy. Listen, for the Nazis, it was for we Jews. For the Inquisition, as Spain was consolidating after the Reconquista, it was the Jews. You know, you take a look at this, and historically, every time there's some kind of dictatorship or fascism, as it were, the first enemy is this 13 million member people in the world.
Exactly.
But it always seems to stretch beyond its own borders. You know, today, in today's world, we take a look at Nazism and how it burst out of Germany and engulfed an entire world in war. By the way, it wasn't just Nazism. You had Nazism in Europe, and you had Japanese totalitarianism, fascism in the Pacific.
Right.
You know, and the entire world was engulfed in war. Communism, need I say more? There are some who posit that today's totalitarianism is, you know, radical Islam. You know, and what country is the first target for radical Islam? It's Israel.
Right.
You know.
And the Jewish people.
Right. But as so goes Israel and the Jewish people, you know, Western democracy, the fall of Western democracy is the ultimate prize. So first Israel, then the United States, or first Israel, then Europe, then the United States. I mean, this is what ends up happening. It's a historical construct.
I would suggest...
So when I made that comment, that's what I was thinking about. I didn't know it was going to be so prosaic.
I would suggest to have you in a future in... And I think that what I would like to speak, it's how the world lose the compass, the moral compass.
Moral compass, yeah.
And this is something, you know, should I buy it? It's your homework.
We've only got 1 minute. Would you like to have a final word before we have to sign off and they cut us off drastically? George will just go whoop right in the middle of a sentence. So you've got about 20 seconds to say a final word.
No, it's always a pleasure to share some time with you, and I look forward to doing so again. And
thank you.
I just hope that the listeners gain something by my few thoughts.
Thank
well,
you.
Well, we enjoy having you, and we are calling you our rabbi in residence. And thank you, Rabbi Jonathan Hausman. We will have you back again.
My pleasure.
Thank you. We are Rachel.
And Sonia.
And this is Israel is Real. You've been listening also to the music by rachelmusic.com. We thank Vision, as always, for supporting us. We're on the air every Friday, 10 to 11 in the morning, WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk, Shabbat
Shalom.